Welcome to the San Jose Hockey Now podcast. I'm Sheng Peng, editor-in-chief of San Jose Hockey Now. You can also find my work at NBC Sharks and at Twitter at Sheng_Peng.
And I'm Keegan McNally. You can find my work at Twitter at halfwall_hockey or at my website half-wallhockey.com or at San Jose Hockey Now, where I post about Sharks prospects. This week, we're going to go over some interesting training camp cuts and decisions. We also have a Ryan Miller interview.
A huge guest, yeah. Great guest. Great interview.
Yeah, he comes and talks all about his new position with the Sharks, where he's going to be taking over as goaltending scout and goaltending development coach for the San Jose Sharks. Great interview. Worth a
listen. He has a really interesting place, too, just as a teaser, guys. He's a really interesting place in Sharks, pre-Sharks history. I bet you've never heard before.
Yeah, he predates a lot of Sharks fans,
not, I imagine. Yeah, let's not give it all away. So
yeah. Anyway, Sheng, start us off. What's the news for this week?
So today this is a huge news because this really clarifies how the Sharks will probably open the season, at least up front. They waived Ryan Carpenter, Jacob Peterson, and Oscar Lindblom. And for me, not too many surprises in a way. I mean, I predicted since the summer that that Lindblom and Peterson, you know, after the Sharks added everybody that they added up front during the summer, Granlund, Hoffman, Duclair, that it'd just be a numbers game. And I also thought that Eklund, even though he's waiver exempt, would perform well enough to stay up, and it looks like he will. So, but anyway, just a quick little mention, though, about Lindblom, Peterson, and Carpenter. First, though, with Carpenter, I'll say right up that I was wrong. Keegan and I last week, we kind of predicted if Logan Couture misses the beginning of the season, which forward would kind of take his place. And I said Ryan Carpenter, and Keegan said Thomas Bortolo. Right now, it looks like Bortolo is tracking, unless Couture magically is ready opening night. But let me just talk about Carpenter for a second. So my thinking with that was that I thought the Sharks, even without Couture, were pretty set up the middle with Hurdle, Granlund, and Sturm as your third line center in this case. And then Carpenter has been a solid fourth line center in NHL for the last five or so years. But I would, and also too with Bortolo too, when we talked last week, Bortolo had just come off a pretty rough game. We'll talk about that in a second. A pretty rough game in, over the weekend against against the Kings. He was not very good in that game. And so I thought that I was trending in that direction, just the camp in general, and, you know, Bortolo's sort of obvious offensive flashes, but, you know, this carelessness with the puck and that sort of thing. I will say with Carpenter, though, that in this camp, and I've sort of kind of heard around that, you know, that, you know, maybe Carpenter wasn't so strong in his last game, and so maybe that could be what helped to do Carpenter in. And also, obviously, Bortolo has scored in back-to-back games.
In the I'm not taking victory laps on it because I think Bortolo actually.
If Logan is healthy, then I think Bortolo goes down. So.
Yeah, and honestly, Bortolo did more in the two games than I thought he would to secure that position. Like that was just he had really good games from Bortolo. He looked comfortable. He didn't look like he was forcing too much. He had flashes where he was like using his hands and getting around guys.
Well, the goals he scored were both impressive, right? But yeah, they showed they weren't like lucky goals. Yeah, they were quick hands, like, right? Yeah,
quick hand, quick plays. He looked like he was comfortable.
Quick thinking,
yeah. And so he did more than I thought he would. Reason why I picked him is because I also looked, because Carpenter's was signed basically to a two-way deal with the Sharks, and that doesn't mean much. Sometimes, like a two-way deal, it's only a one-way deal, and they stay in the NHL. But all of his prior contracts for like 4 or 5 years had been one-way deals. And that told me that the Sharks maybe were really thinking that he's going to be like your number one center on the Barracuda kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and speaking to honestly, too, that Carpenter is like, I believe, 33. And so, you know, so that could be a factor, too, just in his play that, you know, because last year, too, he spent most of the season in the AHL. Had a really good season in the AHL, by the way. So Barracuda are getting
still
a really good player. Yeah.
He's like a very classic fourth line / AHL top.
Right, which is why I thought, you know, I thought that Bortolo would not be able to. We know Bortolo's skill. No one would argue with it, you know, that. And I think he has top six skill. I don't question that. But just the other areas of the game. and the consistency, and that's still an issue, you know. So I don't think that Bartolo can, safely, be with the Sharks, like he's going to be there necessarily the whole season, The consistency is still an issue, just talking about that LA game over the weekend, and even last night in Salt Lake City, Quinn mentioned that even though he thought it was Bartolo's best game, he also did not like Bartolo's first period. And he specified that, and so I think with a lot of young players, not just the Bartolo, that a lack of consistency is going to rear its head, especially with a guy like Thomas, that it has been, I think, a little bit of an issue the last couple of years. But once again, though, the talent is indisputable. So I'm glad that we're going to get to see it. He looks like he'll. These are not final. These rosters. Rosters are going to be submitted, are due to be submitted Monday afternoon at 2 p.m. Mm-hmm. Pacific, and then it becomes public Tuesday openly, and then during Monday, I'll work and see if I can find anything, get some heads up on some guys, but anyway, so it's not official until Monday.
But it gives Bartolo a little bit of an opportunity here to really show that he could, because we talked about Bartolo's fit, and it's like this is the time. If he can somehow stick into a top nine role and like look good on like a third line or a second line, that could take him far, but we'll see.
I mean, I believe he has to be qualified at the end of the season. It's still complicated. I was reading about it earlier. Bartolo's free agent status.
Yeah. He was a 2-year ELC because he came out of college, I think.
Yeah, so
probably
something like, the Sharks have to qualify him. Mm-hmm. But he's not a RFA in the sense of like teams can make offer sheets to him.
So he's
it's just really up to the Sharks. The only decision is, do the Sharks qualify him or not? That's all they have to do. They don't have to worry about if they qualify him. A team can offer. Not that a team would, but,
He's got the current Shane Pinto deal, if you've been following the Shane
Pinto. Is that
Pinto
what it is?
Saga.
No, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So Shane Pinto can't be offer sheeted. He can't. He's kind of just stuck if he wants. Like,
okay.
Basically, he has to sign a contract with Ottawa or not play.
Right.
That's
right.
Kind of it.
But anyway, I just want to drop a brief note about Peterson and Lindblom before we talk about sort of the rest of the roster and how it's shaping up. I wanted to add, too, that David Quinn was, very careful to stress, and he did this all last year, too. Just because you get waived doesn't mean that your NHL road is over. He brings up, he's told the story many times that, Scott Harrington, right, was signed to a PTO by the Sharks last offseason. I don't believe Scott was waived before the beginning of the season for sure. I think he went to Europe with them, but he didn't play any games. Anyway, so he was waived, or after they came back, he was waived. And that sounds like the kind of guy, PTO, waived. Okay, this guy is done. This guy's not coming back to the Sharks. Obviously, Scott, played pretty well with the Barracuda.
Yeah.
The Sharks had injuries or whatever, right? And so Scott came up, and he was with the Sharks just for the rest of the season. And so guys like Ryan, Oscar, and Jacob, that very much could happen. But brief note about Oscar Lindblom and Jacob Peterson. First with Oscar Lindblom, the thing is, I think that that Oscar is still, and we saw this last year, he played pretty much every game last year. He's still a smart player, a good penalty killer. You can trust kind of where he's going to be on the ice, systems, that sort of thing, right? And he's going to give you his best. But there just was no offensive juice very little at least. There were a couple games here and there that I wrote about. But in general, he couldn't really put together any consistent offensive push. And in training camp, I was looking for Oscar to stand out and to be, like Eklund has stood out in the opportunities that he's had, right? He hasn't been perfect, but he has, made plays, at times. And you just didn't see that with Oscar due to preseason and scrimmages, looked a little bit like he was in the same place as he was last year. And so the Sharks are deeper now. And nobody, Oscar obviously has a pretty big contract, and so no one's going to pick him up, with guarantee, almost guarantee. And so he's going to be down with the Barracuda, and, he's going to get a chance to come up, pretty good chance that he'll get a chance to come up. Jacob Peterson is going to surprise some people that he was, Oscar surprises people because of his contract, but hasn't been good enough. Jacob Peterson will surprise people because last year Peterson put up 8 points in 11 games after coming over to trade deadline. But like we talked about, though, I found with Peterson in my watches last year, and reason why, again, over the summer, I thought that he wouldn't make the opening night roster. And again, he might, you know, he might come back just as well too, sure. and you know, make me eat my words a little bit. I hope he does. You know, very nice kid, but anyway, though, I just didn't see a lot to his game besides, you know, being able to, you know, every period, every few shifts or so, you know, kind of, you know, make a great pass here and there. But there just wasn't much else to his game, in my opinion. And so that's why I thought, yeah, you know, like he put up those 8 points in 11 games, but that was next to Tomáš Hertl. And he's not going to get a chance probably mm-hmm. with the Deeper Sharks lineup to play with Tomáš Hertl again. And Hertl's a guy that as, you know, kind of, maybe subpar season that Hertl had last season. Clearly, he's a guy that still makes, you know, his line mates better, takes up space down low and can make plays down low. We saw that just like with Barabanov a couple of years ago when Barabanov came on the scene, right? You know, Hertl helped Peterson. And Peterson wasn't necessarily going to be, you know, your top six forward unless he had a killer camp, which he did not. You know, he struggled in the last game.
He just kind of looked invisible mostly, and he was like on the fourth line, so it wasn't like he had like a ton of opportunity and all that.
But you got to make something, really, right? Like Giovanni Smith is a guy that like on the fourth line, right? But when he's out there, maybe a penalty or two too much. But otherwise, though, you know, like
you on notice the forecheck,
right? Making positive plays besides the penalties. And like we talked about, why Smith is here and all these other guys aren't here. Smith has a specific thing he can do, right? He can enforce, but also be physical, intimidate that way. Mm-hmm. But also, too, you know, he does good things as a player, which we did see in the preseason games. But anyway, I don't know, before we move on, any other thoughts about Oscar or Jacob?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that Oscar did get waived, just because it kind of, this was the first contract that Mike Greer signed as a GM.
And it was the biggest free agent contract last year.
Yeah. And it just kind of shows that he's not afraid.
2.5 million,
At least it shows to me that Greer's not afraid to, like, I don't know, not admit mistakes, but just be like, all right, this didn't work out. Yeah. We're moving on, kind of thing.
It didn't happen. Yeah, like Oscar, when they signed him, they're hoping that he would get back to the player he was with Philadelphia that signed a $3 million contract, AAV, with the Flyers, and you know, was on a 20-goal pace for a couple of years there. So they're hoping for the responsible defensive play, but also, too, like a little bit of offense. And Oscar was just, I think, 25 when he was bought out. So it was a perfectly reasonable kind of gamble for a team like the Sharks that were rebuilding and have space to try guys out, right? So it's perfectly reasonable. It just didn't work out. And you're right. You know, it's good that Mike, you know, he is clearly, you know, recognizes that there are Mike and David Quinn, you know, they recognize that there have been better forwards in camp.
Yeah. Including, and they weren't stuck to it and basically like, well, we signed this guy, we got to play out his contract kind of thing. And,
right.
As far as Peterson, I think, it is interesting because last year he looked good and it was a product of March hockey and playing on
a little honestly, like empty calorie production, you know, to some degree,
But he did, I mean, he's not bad either. He's not bad, was one of the last like cuts here, and he could come back up too. He's probably
there's a fair chance, you know, top nine injury, he can fit in.
I don't think he'll get claimed. I think people are worried that he's going to get claimed, but this time of year, there's
I would predict to you he will be. Yeah.
Yeah. There's so many people being waived that it's really only a select few guys that get claimed every year.
And you sort of need like a top nine spot for him too, to get the most out of him.
Mm-hmm. Like you said, he was traded for Scott Reedy. So it's like, that's his value right now. So hopefully
he raised it a little bit. I'm going to give him that credit, I would guess I would be surprised, you know, maybe not shocked because he was good in that little sample size with the Sharks. But again, I would be surprised, not shocked, but surprised. I'd be shocked. I'd be flabbergasted. I would literally faint if someone claimed Lindblom. But and Mike Greer the Sharks would put out a gift of Mike Greer doing somersaults because they got the contract off the books. But
doing high fives everywhere, all around the office.
But
other than that, we didn't have any movement on the defense front. So let's talk a little bit of who's left on defense and where we think it's going to go.
Before we run to that, though, just to recap, though, the forward count, though, since we're moving on to the defense. So so with the three forwards that were waived, right? And so right now, and there's three that I'm taking out of there's basically 16 forwards officially on the roster. But let's assume that Quentin Musty, he is going to get sent back to Sudbury. So he, you know, so he's not going to be here. Mitchell Russell is officially on the roster, but Russell is hurt. And so when he's healthy, he's going to, you know, join the Barracuda. And then the other guy, of course, the big question mark is Logan Couture. And Logan Couture actually skated today for the first time since training camp started. So, you know, essentially the first time in maybe 3 weeks. And so if this was like the playoffs were like 6 days from now, then I would say for sure Logan Couture is playing game one of the playoffs. But this is game one of the regular season. And his injury, which we assume, we don't know for sure, but it's lower body and, you know, the kind that can be aggravated if he puts too much on it, that sort of thing, right? So it's a fair chance it's like a groin injury, something like that. We don't know for sure, so not saying it is that for sure. But if it is in that area, though, then there is no reason to for him to push it if he's not ready 6 days from now, opening night. Again, this isn't the playoffs. So you know, projections, even though it is a great sign for Couture to be back on the ice, is that he will not be there next Thursday when the Sharks take on the Golden Knights. So anyway, that leaves, just to run over the names, we talked about Bortolo and Eklund, Barabanov, Duclair, Granlin, Hurdle, Hoffman, Kunin, LeBanc, Giovanni Smith, we talked about, Sturm, Zadina, and Zetterlin. And so we'll talk more about that, kind of the all the other names that are left on the list. But I think it is a... I guess to close, before we get to the defense, that this is if these are the 13 forwards that start the season with not counting Couture, that this is a pretty fair list of the guys that who should be here. I know that some people aren't fans of LeBanc and Zetterlin. LeBanc's actually had a decent-ish camp. I don't think
he had a good game.
I think he's done some things there, and he is clearly skilled enough to be in this league. You know, it's always the question about the other things with him, but you're not going to tell me that Jacob Peterson or Lindblom or Carpenter outperformed LeBanc in the preseason. You know, we're not talking about last year, right? We're talking about in the preseason, right? And so I don't think that they did. And then, you know, Zetterlin, you know, gets some consternation because he wasn't very good with the Sharks last year. But, you know, he's a guy, obviously a big part of the Meyer trade, but also he's a guy that you look at him, you think that he should be better. You know, he does, you know, he's strong. He skates well. He goes to the net, you know. Yeah. And also, too, he was not worse than Lindblom, Peterson, and Carpenter either in the preseason, just to toss, you know, mention those names again. And so, so those are sort of reasons why. I think those two also have remained, besides the obvious names like, you know, Hurdle.
Yeah. Zetterlund is a little wrecking ball.
Yeah,
but he can be. But it doesn't seem like he always knows where to be on the ice, especially to get good offensive chances and such. But, you know, he still has some value, especially because he's probably going to be playing in the bottom six.
Yeah, he looks like he's taking it for the fourth line. Also, Quinn did mention, and I think it's actually a pretty good summation of Zetterlin right now that, like you know, he's out there, like, he's a little bowling ball. He's out there in the middle of stuff. He just seems like he's that close. Like, you know, he gets good scoring chances and good position. You know, he puts his body where he needs to, right? And so, you know, maybe just needs, like, that one goal to kind of open, you know, just to get that weight off, you know, off of him from last year, you know, not scoring. So, so anyway.
And somebody would also pick him. So,
You know, I don't know about that for sure. Just
they might.
Because his contract is...
Oh, he's 2 years.
Yeah. 2 years, and it's a little bit more. So maybe not, you know, but for example, like
a 2 year contract.
Yeah, like Alex Zadina would get picked up, I think, for sure.
Sure.
Just 1 year, $1.1 million. Zetterlin, maybe though. Again, teams like scouts like him. You know, that's part of the reason why the Sharks traded for him. That he was well thought of for his time in New Jersey. We just did not see the best of him, obviously, you know, here. So hopefully we will. Anyway, mm-hmm. we'll talk about the also possible lines and all that kind of stuff. Next week as we get closer to actual opening night. But let's talk about the defense though. And right now, the Sharks didn't make any moves with their defense. And right now, they still have a very full list. And let's say they do start with 13 forwards and the two goalies, which we're not going to get to because it's going to be Kapo and Mackenzie Blackwood, unless something crazy happens in Napa, which is where the team is having a team bonding this weekend. Anyway, though, so right now they have 11 defensemen. Benning, Burrows, Emberson, Ferraro, Knizhov, McDonald, Ahoutia, Ruda, Šimek, Thrun, and Vlasic. Only one of these defensemen is waiver exempt. That's Henry Thrun, of course. It's still kind of a wait and see because Šimek, of course, got hurt, I believe, in the second preseason game, lower body injury. He hasn't skated since then. And so I think conveniently there's a good chance that he's going to start the season on IR, which will help with his decision. My guess is that McDonald will go to waivers. If you look at the rest of this list, you know, Emberson and Ahoutiak are younger. That's a big part of they're younger and not proven. So they have a chance to kind of show themselves. McDonald, I believe, is 29, 30 now. So even though McDonald, I think, is a valid, you know, number seven defenseman in this league. Mm-hmm.
The Ryan Carpenter of defenders.
Yeah, the Sharks have have plenty of guys like that, kind of, though, if you know, all the names I have rattled off here that can fill that role. You know, Benning, Burrows, we talked about it last week, I think. Ferraro, Vlasic, and Ruda are safe, so that's five that are safe there. Knizhov is kind of a tweener here where he does have a two-year contract, and he's young, but he's not Thrun or Emberson Young. And Carl Stu Knizhov is coming off of a couple of, obviously a lot of significant injuries the last couple of years. I will say for Knizhov, though, and I think that they will keep him to start the season. Knizhov, he showed it last year, too, that the skating is still there. Obviously, he's huge. He has that potential. You know, you watch that and you get excited. I think, though, that one thing that I have some concern about watching him this preseason is I don't know if the puck moving has evolved enough, and not like he has to move it like Erik Karlsson, right, or anything like that, right? But just got to make that good first pass, like, all the time. And also, too, every once in a while you have to make a nice pass, you know, a stretch pass here and there, right? And I'm not sure if that's going to be consistent enough for the NHL. We'll see on that point. He also, you know, can run around a little bit too. He moves so well, you know, gets himself out of position from time to time, which is normal, you know. And I think losing those 2 years and that experience too, you know, hurts. But he is, not waiver exempt. He's 25. He's on a 2-year contract, but it's just $1.1 million, I believe, or thereabouts. So, he is a possibility to get picked up. I don't know if he would be. Ahoutiak, I'm fairly sure would be because Ahoutiak's younger and, you know, not
very young for not being waivers like exempt, basically.
And Emberson, too, is along those lines, too, that I think. So anyway, so my I don't know about your final list here, but I think we might agree on this, that Thrun, even though Thrun has had a terrific preseason, that my final, I think they'll go 13-8-2 to keep the guys that are to keep the guys from waivers. And let's assume Šimek is on IR, McDonald is waived, Thrun is sent down because he's waiver exempt. And so that leaves Benning, Burrows, Emberson, Ferraro, Knizhov, Ahoutiak, Ruda, and Vlasic. So what do you think?
Yeah, that's basically my list too. I think at the beginning of the training camp, I was very sure that Thrun.
Even
in the summer and all that.
Because well, even last week playing. Before Emberson.
But then they kept adding like 6-7 D-men, and you're like, why are you adding all these dudes? And like in some ways, they do have better depth now, and Emberson was a great pickup. We'll talk about his play in a little bit, I think. And then Thrun has done nothing wrong. Like, that's the other thing, is Thrun hasn't done anything wrong to be like, you don't deserve to make the NHL right now. I think that there's also a very realistic possibility he's on the Sharks roster later in the year and just kind of sticks with it somehow or some way, trades or whatever.
Yeah.
But maybe putting him in the AHL, pairing him or putting him with Mooka Madulin down there, giving them all the time to like grow together and form a solid defensive unit for the Barracuda could be beneficial rather than him playing a little above his head, kind of like what happened with like Ferraro and a couple other dudes who get like immediately thrust into the NHL. Yep. They might form bad habits kind of
Absolutely. I mean, Thrun is more mature, so like there's easily Thrun is ahead of Mukhmudulin, you know, just in terms of just his ability to handle, I think, the NHL game.
Mature game.
Yeah, mature game, even though Mukhmudulin, you know, has a higher ceiling. But I also want to add with Thrun, you know, people will be like, oh, you know, Campus brought meritocracy, you know, Ohotiek was hurt, he didn't even play, hardly played. You can't say he's better than Thrun. Yeah, no, Thrun was better than Ohotiek. No one's arguing that. But like, how stupid will you feel as the general manager of a team that Ohotiek turns out to be a pretty good player? You wave him, someone picks him up, he turns out to be a good player. And all you have to do is send Henry Thrun, or a team that is, you know, likely, you know, not likely to make the playoffs either, right? That, you know, down to the Barracuda for a few weeks to find out how good Ohotiek is and Amberson is, right? Like, how stupid would you the fans, how much would they howl if my career made it a pure meritocracy and sent down, you know, Ohotiek and he gets snapped up and he turns out ends up being like a really good bottom pairing defenseman, which is sort of what he's projected, you know, like I'm just like a classic example, like Matt Green or something like that, right?
Sure.
You know, old Kings example there, but you know, the perfect bottom pairing defenseman. How mad would Sharks fans be all that when Michael, all you had to do was send Henry down for a few weeks just to find out, you know, Henry's not likely to suffer being down there. He's mature. He's a big kid. You know, he's going to be able to handle it, you know, that he got sent down.
So I think last year, I mean, every year there's about one or two really good waiver claims that you're like, how did this guy go through waivers last year? I think it was the biggest name was probably Juuso Välimaki, who was claimed by Arizona and put up like 35 points in like a starting D-man role. It's, you know, there's still lots of holes with Juuso Välimaki's game, but it was like Calgary just kind of like toyed him around for a while until he could not pass through waivers anymore. And then I don't remember who they promoted over him, obviously, but you know, that kind of thing. They got claimed up, and now all of Calgary's like, wait, this guy could put up 35 points? Why isn't he on our team?
Yeah.
That could happen. Not that Ohotiek's going to be an offensive defender, but, like, somebody like that where, yeah, you're right, like, they go to a different place, and because we didn't send Thrun down for, like, the month of October, Ohotiek gets claimed by somebody.
Yeah, we don't find out, you know, how good he is with the Sharks or whatever. And also want to add, too, with Henry, you know, as good as he has been, like, let's not, you know, get ahead of ourselves, you know. Like, yeah, he was on power play one. He scored some points. Henry Thrun is not likely to be a PP1 guy. Like, that's not, like, sustainable. You know, that's not going to translate to opening night. You know, you drop him on PP. That's unfair to Henry to drop him on PP1. And so the Sharks, you know, I think they recognize that, which is why they won 5 forwards, and I think that's how they'll start the season. Well, they will. They tried that out in the last exhibition game with Mikael Granlund at the point. And because I think they recognize that they don't have a clear clear PP1 quarterback, you know. It doesn't have to be, again, it doesn't have to be Erik Karlsson, but anyone even close to that, really, you know.
Yeah.
And, of course, some people will be like, well, Matt Benning on PP2, what's he doing there? Let's not forget that the second unit of power play, they're often the last unit out before right before the penalty ends. And so you want every team is going to have usually a solid defenseman back there, so not to so they don't get killed defensively once, you know, the penalty taker is out of the box, right? And so you're gonna have a defenseman back there. And why Benning instead of Thrun? You know, again, I like Thrun. I really like Thrun. I projected him on the roster the whole time, going back to the summer, you know, before they acquired Amberson. So this is no discredit to Thrun. But, you know, a guy like Amberson, like we think we mentioned last week, is probably better defensively than Thrun right now, even though Thrun has worked a lot on his game there. A guy like Benning is better defensively than a Thrun right now, probably, right? And offensively, Thrun is better than those guys, but not that much better. That it's going to be like, oh, this guy must be up, you know?
Sure. Right? He needs more time. He still has lots to work on. He did improve a lot, I think, in the summer, which is good to see.
He did. He's going to be fine. He's going to be fine. So.
Yeah. I still like his NHL future for sure.
Oh, it's not sure,
like
this is
the send down of all send downs.
Yeah, no. Yeah, so like I said, I'm a huge fan of Henry Thrun's game. I think he's gonna be fine down there. We'll find out what they've got in Ohotiek and Amberson. You find out that they're not really that good, you wave them again, then you call up Thrun. So easy peasy, right?
And I think Šimek might, once he gets off of IR, might also be in the waiver pool as well.
Yeah.
Just because they've shown that he's not afraid to waive $2 million plus contracts, you know? It's
like, yeah, because no one's going to pick him up.
No one's going to pick him up. And I don't know. Šimek is kind of, in this whole thing, kind of lost everywhere. Like, I don't know. He's still Šimek. He's never really shown, or hasn't shown enough in many years to be like, you have to be on this roster.
Yeah, that's fair.
He's 31 now as well, so he's still.
I like his game a lot. You know, he is probably a guy who could very much be a number seven defenseman like a McDonald, sure, or maybe even a bottom pairing somewhere. But he makes too much money, and yeah, he was hurt, and so he just kind of gets pushed out here. Sure. But yeah, once he gets healthy, we'll see, right? Like, David Quinn has talked about, Šimek's improving. Don't rule him out opening night yet. And so maybe that will be the case. And then they'll have a very interesting decision. But I still think if Šimek gets healthy, that, yeah, like you said, that he would be, and that lines up with what I predicted over the summer, that they will waive him too.
Mm-hmm. And then Kähkönen and Blackwood. That's our goalies.
Yeah, we're done.
let's talk a little bit about just some guys that have stood out, or plays that you've noticed, or any kind of trends about any of the players in training camp. Because we've had a few surprises, I think. One for me from last game was Granlund. I really actually enjoyed watching Michael Granlund. he had tons of hustle. There was one play specific, I think he was on the penalty kill, where he like dove and like knocked the puck out, I think with his hand, to get it out of the zone. It reminded me of the famous San Jose Sharks penalty kill from like 2006 against the Edmonton Oilers. I think it was 2006 in the playoffs. Anyway, old Shark stuff where like the defender like jumps and throws the puck out of the zone kind of thing. And he just had like a lot of hustle for a guy that is a veteran player. It's not like he has to prove that he has to be here, but you can hear it from like his interviews where he's like, I am better than people think I am kind of thing. And it showed. He looked comfortable in even strength, penalty kill, power play. Looked like a good forward and a good add, even if he's a little overpaid right now. I think there's a chance he could like rebuild his value with the Sharks if they
I'm counting on it. I've liked I've heard only good things about Mikhail and Cam from Quinn, and just like not like just like how do you say it just like
coach
he really likes Granlund's game,
sure,
and we saw a lot of just small, like the very first play against the Kings last night in Salt Lake City, Granlund on a forecheck steals it, quick pass to Eklund finds Kunin right in the slot. So Granlund is underrated in really a lot of ways. People are sleeping on him. I know he had a rough time in Pittsburgh, so yeah, no, I expect a lot out of him. Otherwise, besides that, I've written about it. Mike Hoffman has actually surprised me. Like, just everyone knows about his shot, but he's actually a very good puck mover. Like on a power play, a lot of crafty little passes. Even for his goal, right? Yesterday, it's his neutral zone pass to Hurdle. And Hurdle is able to lead it into the zone, and then that's just like it's not like the most complicated pass ever, but it's
the veteran
tape, right in stride. And you watch him on the power play, he is a very good puck mover. Obviously he thinks to shoot first, so that's his game. He should. Besides that, let me see, just a couple more guys for me. We mentioned Giovanni Smith. Definitely belongs on this roster. Also, too, actually, Philip Zadina, I talked with David Quinn about this. Was going to write about this a little bit. David Quinn loves his compete. Talked about, call him an honest player, which if you read anything that I've written about William Eklund, that is a real compliment from David for a young player to be called that. And so with Philip, of course, it's just a matter of can he produce right? But also, too, and Tomas Hertl talked about a little bit, Philip has talked about, confidence being a problem in Detroit. If he's not producing, Philip has shown that he can still help you as a player. So he's got to not get down on himself if he's not, putting up the goals or the points that he expects, and just concentrate on doing, excelling in the other areas of the game, winning puck battles and getting chances, accumulating those, things that he's done in the past, right? Not get down about that. And then the production will likely, start from there. I think those are a couple of things that have stood out to me about camp.
Yeah, Zanina is a good, he's a good defensive forward already. And like you said, lots of hustle, lots of lots of compete and but the, yeah, it's kind of been this thing since he was in Detroit. It's just his production has not been there. So hopefully he's got enough confidence now with San Jose that him being next to Hurdle that he's like not going to be down on himself because the points aren't coming right away. But yeah, I liked Zadina. I think Bordalo's had great, like we mentioned, great two games. Lots of patience, which is not something that like Bordalo is always known for. Sometimes he makes things happen or like he forces plays and leads to bad turnovers. Yeah. And he didn't really have that much these past two games, which was good.
I predict that he'll need a little more time in the AHL. I think, you know, eventually. We talked about this with him before that, you know, less is more. And I think he's still learning that. And I think that, but it's what I guess what I'll say, though, is that it is really promising, though, that like the message seemed to sink in the last couple of games. Like it's the message is there to sink in, unlike, you know, other, you know, Sharks prospects like, you know, just Ryan Merkley. Right. So the message seems to be sinking in, you know, and so it might take a little time this year, but it's good that you know, that's happening.
Eklund's still a superstar. then finally, let's just mention a couple more guys and then get out of here. And you guys can listen to the Ryan Miller interview. But I really enjoyed watching Ty Emberson. I think he's got a lot of defensive value. He's got good feet. Like he's got good backward skating. Moves really well. He had
a few
plays.
He was in the right place, stronger than you know.
Good breakout passes.
Yeah.
He, you know, he's not like obviously got like crazy good hands, and he's not gonna make like, you know, his money being a power play producer or anything like that. But he a couple of times was like stopping up rushes before they entered into the zone, and I was just impressed, especially because it's like he got claimed, moved across the country, and then plopped into this lineup, and he did really well. I think it was a great pickup.
Good point.
I mean, especially for 23-year-old defender that the Sharks are going to hopefully kind of grow with if he does keep improving. I like it. I like it a lot. Kenijov, like you mentioned, was okay. Not terrible. Finally, who else? Blackwood. Blackwood was the last one I want to mention. He's going to, I think the consensus is probably going to be that Kakanen's the starter and Blackwood is kind of the backup. If that's, what do you think?
No, I mean, like Blackwood was brought in to be the starter, but I think he was brought in to be the starter. But Captain,
Blackwood,
obviously, Blackwood, yeah. But, you know, just based on the past, Blackwood has been a starter before. Captain has never quite done it, you know. Obviously, Blackwood's been hurt the last couple of years. But, you know, Captain has been so good in camp. In his preseason games. But Blackwood's been good, too. You know, Blackwood hasn't been as good, but he's been pretty good, too. And so we'll see. I think it is an open question who gets opening night, but that doesn't mean that's going to be the Sharks' number one guy.
Yeah,
you know, it could probably end up being, like, indeed a kind of a 1A, 1B. I think that's what they're hoping, that they're both very good. And so maybe you have, like, a 45-35 split in games about, right? And so that might be ideal. That kind of trends the way that, you know, people, you know, use their goaltenders now. There's very few like Connor Hellebuyck types that play 60 games, you know, these days, right? And so whether that's going to be, you know, Blackwood or Captain will obviously just be up to them. You know, I think that, again, that going into training camp, that Blackwood had a little bit of the edge just in terms of name and in terms of just like, just a, you know, projection maybe, right? But Kakanen, it's close, very close though, and Kakanen can make up for that, or, you know, might have made up for that little bit of difference with, you know, a terrific preseason.
Yeah, he had a fantastic game. So I guess this is less about Blackwood and more about Kakanen, but he had a very good game. And he looks a little bit different in net than I remember him from last year. Like, he mentioned that he changed some things.
A little more stay at home, I think. We can break that. I mean, it's preseason, though. You know, if I play preseason, someone would find something nice. David would find something nice to say about me, I'm sure.
Put me in net. I'll do great.
Yeah. tries hard, you know, or something like that, you know. So
can stand on the ice.
Can stand on the ice without falling. Yeah. So we'll see, you know, if the preseason success extends into the regular season, then, we'll talk more about, you know, the changes in Kakanen's game. But right now, it's still, everyone's excited, everybody's undefeated, so, yeah.
I'm saying Kakanen gets the starting nod, but we'll talk about predictions next week.
Opening night,
Opening night.
Okay.
We'll see. All right.
I think Blackwood. You
think Blackwood? All right.
Yeah.
We're going to flip a coin here. It's 50-50.
It's close. It's close, yeah.
It is, yeah. Anyway, any other final thoughts before we get out of here?
Nope.
No.
I'm pretty good here. We have an incredible interview with Ryan Miller. A lot of it's not a like a terribly long interview, but like you know, I think he puts a lot of thought into pretty much every question. And so yeah, enjoy.
All right, bye guys. Hope you have a good week.
We've got a special guest here on the San Jose Hockey Now podcast. We've got the winningest goalie in American history with 391 wins. He played 18 years with the Buffalo Sabres, St. Louis Blues, Vancouver Canucks, and Anaheim Ducks. And he was just hired by the San Jose Sharks as a goalie scout and to work in goaltending development. Welcome, Ryan Miller.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Well, first, actually, Ryan, I actually wanted to welcome you home. I don't think everybody knows that you were a proud Santa Clara Blackhawks alum. So when did you live here and what got your family out here to the Bay Area?
Yeah, that's something not a lot of people know is I did spend some time in California as a kid. My dad worked for Symantec, as a software company, and they were based in Silicon Valley, and we moved to the Santa Clara area, and I spent about 2 full years out there, right around the age of 6 till I was about 8. And actually kind of served as inspiration, wanted to play goalie, ended up starting to play goalie out there.
Yeah, I heard a story that, and first we had to thank Symantec and antivirus software, you guys remember. We had to thank Symantec for getting you out here, but I read a story that you had to kind of beg your dad to try. Your dad didn't want you to play goal.
No, I think it's always a hard one. Knowing what I know about goaltending now, it is hard to watch your son play. And I have got a chance to watch my son play, so I know how my dad was feeling. But I just felt strongly about the position, and I was really interested in it, curious about it, and I enjoyed it when I got the chance to play. So I wanted to do more, and my dad was my coach at the time, and he kind of laid down the law and was like, "Well, listen, like I need you to skate, I need you to play." And I kept asking, and he kind of wasn't letting me try. So I said, listen, I'm not playing anymore unless I get to try. But this is in the middle of the game. And he said, sure, if you go out and get, like, 2 more goals and get 3 assists, I think I already had a goal. And he's like, you can try. And I went out and did it, like, in a period. And I kind of came back to the bench like, all right, like, let's do this.
I love a 6-year-old Ryan Miller already exercising his leverage as an athlete. So it's very good. Also, to your cousins, Kevin and Kip, they both played for the Sharks. And so I wonder, when you were a kid, I mean, did you have any Sharks experiences growing up? Ever get taken to the locker room? I don't know. Going to any games at, the Cow Palace?
Well, yeah. Mainly on the road, because we had moved back to Michigan by then.
Okay.
My brother and I were actually the early petitioners for the team. I remember my dad likes to tell a story, my mom as well. Like, we took our wagon out and we're going door to door, and we had the actual form and pamphlet that was going around to sign off.
That's crazy.
To get the city to sign off, like, we want an NHL club in this part of the world. And right, you have to go to all the citizens and get it on the docket and all that stuff. And the youth hockey wasn't real big then, but it was enough, and we were all kind of trying to do our part. So it worked.
And that's absolutely a crazy story.
So
fast forwarding a little bit in your career, I think you're most well known for playing with a lot of very good Buffalo Sabres teams. What can you tell us about Mike Greer back then?
Well, Greerzy and I have a real fun relationship. I just like that he loves to laugh. He likes to be a little bit loose with his friends. He has that competitive nature, but he just has that big laugh, and we had a lot of fun with him. But also inspirational. He's a tough, hard player to play against. He brought a great edge to the team. But on the other end of it, you're just the kind of guy you're going to get a big hug, and you're going to get a lot of laughs, and I had a ton of fun with him, and I'm glad to be reunited with him. It's fun to be around Mike and talk with him, and I'm thankful that I have this opportunity to use my hockey brain a little bit here and get back to work.
Yeah, is it interesting seeing Mike on the other side of things, where it's kind of like what happened with your Sabres teams when you were coming into the league, where In 2002, 2003, the team was older, coming out of the Dominik Hasek era, and they struggled a little bit. And then 3 years later, you're the starter, and the Sabres are making the conference finals with a lot of young players, like, taking up the mantle and everything. Do you feel some of that is kind of, like, happening in San Jose, where they're in the down years for right now and trying to rebuild back up?
Yeah, I mean, a team needs an identity, right? And I think in those years that were kind of down years, the Sabres were slowly developing that identity. And I think as young guys, I don't think we were the ones to define that entirely. It was really guys like Greerzy and Chris Drury and Daniel Briere, all guys are now GMs in the league. And I don't know. It's just they started to build an identity, and then our energy and our youth, you know, we slotted in just really nicely to that because we had quality people, quality players, and that energy, that spark really is what kind of put it over the edge. And we got close a couple times to really reaching our goal, but, you know, NHL being the NHL, is a hard trophy to win the Stanley Cup. So, you know, we got close, but we did have the right mix. We had the right energy Yeah, you can see the Sharks going that direction because it's going to take an identity that's developed in a new kind of way. You know, you have some longtime players who have moved on in the last few years. So it really is going to be about what do the San Jose Sharks look like and what do they stand for, you know, in the next few years and who's going to define that. And I think I was able to come up for training camp, spend some time, and really watch some of the players. And it's a great opportunity for these guys because they get to write their own story and there are a lot of jobs available to push for. You know, it's an exciting time for these guys. Sky's the limit.
Well, Ryan, now that you're retired, can you share any good Shark stories from, you know, your playing days? You know, you're in the Western Conference for the last half of your career.
Yeah, no, I mean, no real fun ones because coming to Anaheim, we matched up in the playoffs and were quickly swept out of there by the Sharks. So, yeah, that was a tough one. You know, coming to Anaheim, changing roles for me, you know, being more of a backup goalie. But that first year, it was kind of exciting. I got to play a lot down the stretch. John Gibson, the starting goalie, was hurt. So I got to play a lot of hockey down the stretch there. So that was an exciting time for me, new team, playoff run. So that was a lot of fun, but the Sharks kind of threw some water on that fire. But no, I just remember over the years playing against, you know, Marlo, Thornton, even, you know, back in Roenick, you know, like going way, way back against some, mm-hmm. you know, really great players. And I don't know. I loved coming to San Jose because I did have that connection and, you know, remembering, I remember coming the first time to play. I can't remember exactly, but yeah, just that feeling like, wow, like, okay, I'm in the NHL then. Wow, isn't this weird? I lived here as a kid and there was no team and now there's a team and then we're playing. Like, it was just, you know, kind of one of those trippy things where you're playing like, wow, San Jose, Santa Clara, like playing in the NHL here now. I used to, you know, playing in the mall in Santa Clara, where, you know, they have this tiny little rink kind of halfway underground. So, yeah, it's kind of cool to look back on.
All right, Ryan, I know we don't have tons of time, so we're going to hit with, like, the hard-hitting questions now. Who's the best American goalie not named Ryan Miller? Go.
Well, I mean, I'd like to see John Gibson get a chance here with – get the Ducks on the right side of things just for his sake. I know that I'm on the competing side now, so we don't want him to do too well, but Gibby's got a lot of talent. And then you got a whole crop of young guys coming up. I guess, you know, Ottinger looked good last year. We have Hellebuck is been consistent. I mean, he's probably the one you would say right now has the mantle. He's
what we mean in the history of American goalies, though.
Oh, I mean, I don't know. I loved watching Mike Richter as an American.
Sure. So did I.
He's kind of a go-to. I'd go with him.
Okay. All right. So no offense, right. Jonathan Quick. Ryan Miller says Mike Richter. So.
So since you've announced your retirement, you said you wanted to get into goaltending development, obviously with your new role with the Sharks. What's attractive to you about that new role? What do you like about it?
Well, I just spend so much time focusing on myself in that regard. It's kind of one of those, I used to walk to school both ways, uphill and, you know, into the wind both ways kind of thing. But it's like when I came into the league, it was really like you were kind of left on your own to kind of figure a few of these things out. And what would have really helped me and what did end up helping me was finding other inputs and other influences to different parts of my hockey career. So it wasn't all just coming from like my current coaches. It was people I went to Michigan State. They're known to be an osteopathic medical school. Somebody who could help me with my body alignment and the way I worked out specific to being a goaltender who is, anyone who knows me, I'm taller, but I'm very slight build. I need to train a certain way to be effective and to maintain a certain level of energy and a certain, to just be effective in what I do. So I had to seek that out. I'm a big proponent of sports psychology, having somebody to talk to and really help you set goals and, just have a understanding of your feelings. You're never going to have a full control over that, but like just have an understanding. So, seeking out that kind of help and attention. Just every aspect, goaltending coach, doctors, basically a pit crew, the professional athlete. Mm-hmm. The amount of games you play, the amount of time you spend focusing, massage therapists, trainers, everything.
Yeah.
I would seek that out because I knew that it might give me a competitive advantage. Mm. And now we see this a lot more and that the teams are providing that in-house, which is awesome. But I think that it was my job for almost 20 years, if counting juniors in college, 25, almost 30 years of effort spent on that side of things. I have a lot of, quick knowledge to give. It's not like I have to go research it. I can reference everything very quickly. And when I see it in younger goalies or even goalies who have played a little bit in the NHL, I can pick things out pretty quickly that maybe I ran into. It doesn't take me long. So really just want to use that side of my hockey brain. I spent a lot of time focusing inward, and obviously that can't last forever, so focusing outward.
And then why the Sharks specifically? Were there other teams interested? Did you go through a process with that as well?
Well, mainly
talked about Santa Clara and all that.
that's just one of those ironies of life kind of thing, but the biggest part is my career. When I retired, Noreen, my wife, and I, we were trying for a second child, and we have been blessed with a baby girl. She's a year and a half old now. Thanks. So we have our son, Bodie, who's 8, and we have a 1.5-year-old girl. So I wasn't looking to do anything, and Greers and I talked and came up with a way for me to contribute on a high level still and still have that family time that I'm craving. And and then when the time comes, I'm sure I can spend a little bit more time in the hockey world, but I'm trying to really balance it right now. I don't want to be missing holidays. I don't want to miss birthdays. Mm-hmm. And once you enter into that hockey schedule, that's what you're signing up for. So really it was just that conversation with Greerzy, because I talked to a few other teams about other positions, and I realized that the way I did things and the way I would do a job would be probably the busiest job in all of hockey. So I didn't want to do that to myself or my family at the time. Yeah.
And what does it mean to join another organization with Thomas Vanek?
It's cool. It's fun. We haven't talked a lot about it yet, but our roles being pretty different, but it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun when we can eventually cross paths, and I'm sure there'll be a reason to catch up on all this stuff real soon.
Mm-hmm. And Mike, when we asked him about you a couple weeks ago, one of the things he said was, you know, when he played with you, he just kind of could see how you saw the game and how thoughtful and analytical you were about it. And I think you sort of touched on it with, you know, the talk about Michigan State and just the resources that they had. But what does Mike mean by that when he talks about just how thoughtful and analytical you are about goaltending?
Well, I tried to pay attention and gain an advantage anywhere I could. I just think, you know, when video was becoming a resource, I wanted to see every shooter. When we finally had subscription services that actually came up on, you know, I just watch hockey because eventually I'm going to play that guy. So like, I'm just going to watch and absorb, and I'm going to take it in and figure out what it means to my game. And it means I've seen a lot of hockey, played a lot of hockey. You know, so I think that just as a hockey player, you do have to be a student of the game. Like, you can't just say, oh, I just skate around and see what happens. Like, you have to catch the patterns that are happening. You have to be able to play with different kind of players. So that means you have to know them. You have to actually know who they are on the ice. I mean, it's great to get to know your teammates as well, but you also have to know who they are on the ice and how you can get the most out of that interaction. So there's a lot that goes into it. And I think that maybe that's what he's picking up on, because I took my role as a goaltender and ended up, you know, being the starting goalie for a long time on a lot of teams. You have to really be almost like a politician. Like, you have to kind of get along with everybody and communicate mm-hmm. with everybody in a certain way. And most, I'd say 90 some percent of teams I'm on, everybody gets along great. There are mm-hmm. a few odd ducks along the way, so you still have to bring them into the fold as a goaltender and be able to talk with them. So yeah, there's a lot that goes into it, but I think he's just picking up on that I tried to check off every box.
And to put you on the spot again, I guess, what's something that's you think is undervalued in goaltending development and scouting, and something that's overvalued, something that it gets mentioned a lot that you don't think is as important?
It's a tough one, because all of those things can bite you, because mm-hmm. I think bigger is not necessarily better all the time, but there is mm-hmm. kind of a tipping point where a goalie is of a certain size, they are going to have trouble in certain areas unless they really make up for it with outstanding technique. So sometimes size is a little bit overvalued, I think. Undervalued is probably just the guys who can play the game. I think we look at guys who do things really, really well technically, but there's still a lot of feel that I think needs to go into goaltending. So guys who can, in the moment, put themselves in the best chance, you know, to get hit with a puck, you're still kind of looking for that. Sometimes guys think in the moment they're just, oh, I'm perfectly aligned. My hands are perfect. Mm-hmm. Everything's great. The puck should hit me. You know, I'm really looking for the guys who know that's not the case.
Sure.
Interesting.
And something else that Mike said was that looking back at your playing style, your history, that he said that every so many years you would change your style to the way the game was played. You know, when you're younger, you're more aggressive, and then you kind of backed it more as you got older, and just you adjusted your style for sort of the era. And so my question is, if you were playing today, what would your playing style be?
Well, I was moving it in a direction where I was trying to play on the post a little bit better, play back more than I used to. Like you said, like, you could get away with being more aggressive back in the day. Defensive schemes were built kind of around that. And yeah. Offensive schemes, guys were not finding some of those softer spots. But guys are willing to shoot from different areas now, where I think early on in my career, they might get just immediately put in the stands for some of the shots that you're seeing right now. But a lot of those shots can go in, and they do go in. They're not really wasted shots. Guys have gotten really good at finding soft spots on the ice and practicing in those areas, and goalies have to adjust. And I think even now you're having to adjust again. You know, guys are playing down a lot on low angle shots, but shooters are adjusting. We have to, you know, see the goalies adjust again. You can't just assume something's going to happen. I like to see guys who are in the moment make a good choice. But the main thing now is you just never want to overextend and give up the net too much. Mm-hmm. Go fly it, taking yourself too far outside the post. Guys are just guys are just that good now where they're just, okay, the goalie's overcommitting and I'm sending it to the guy who is open. And,
sure,
you know, they're noticing when the guys get a little bit out of control. You know, they're not wasting their bullets. You know, they see the guys, you know, might have a disadvantage or they're hitting that play. And so I think goaltending's constantly like cat and mouse. It's adjusting to the shooters. And it's been fun to watch over the last few years. Guys have gotten really technical, but I think you're starting to see that, you know, you're coming back into a lot of feel being used as well.
Okay, great. Well, Ryan, we just want to thank you so much for your time. I know we're almost at time. We have just three questions to go. So Keegan, go ahead.
All right. So you're here with the Sharks now. I mean, you touched on it a little bit, but what's your scope of your job? Are you going to be more around with the Barracuda, or is this kind of like junior prospects and amateur prospects going forward that you're going to be scouting and seeing?
I think I'm going to be able to kind of touch on everything. I think when I have time and I can get up there, it's going to be to check in. I know that my son's playing in a hockey tournament in November up there, so I'm definitely going to make sure to pop in for
Does
everything
he play
I can.
Goalie, by the way, or is he a skater?
No, he likes to skate out. He said he's okay. About 10% more of a player than a goalie. So
he got hit by a shot and he was over it.
A lot of kids have that feeling.
And just so wondering, just your general impressions of Sharks training camp. I know that you can't get too much about the specific, you know, prospects that the Sharks have, but just your general impressions, because you said that you were here for the beginning of camp.
Yeah, no, it was a good pace. The guys looked like they were ready to compete. And from the preseason I saw, I've been watching a little bit, then I went live to watch in Anaheim. They carried the play Anaheim, so that was encouraging. I know the score didn't end up that way, but you know, they were making plays and they definitely got their chances, and that's what you want to see.
And finally, I just want to wrap up with, I know that you're a big part of the Steadfast Foundation, so I just wanted to give kind of that spotlight so you can talk about you know, more about the organization.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, that's another thing that evolves. You know, in my hockey career, you change your style, and our foundation also. Our platform has changed a little bit since I'm not in Buffalo or in Michigan as much full time, where we really had a foothold. But we do continue to do a lot of work with Carly's Club in Buffalo, New York, and the Sabres. When I had my jersey retired, created an endowment that would carry on a lot of the good work there. So we're going to look to escalate that back up in Buffalo this year for sure, and hopefully that can grow and grow.
Okay, great. So everybody go to the Steadfast Foundation online. They can contribute there, right?
Yeah, they so choose it. Sometimes we run promotions and little things. During the pandemic, I had some equipment available just to raise money for some of the food banks and different things. So you do have to kind of keep an eye out, but if you follow on social media, usually if anything comes up, I'll put it up. I'm not the best at being a daily kind of person, but I let people know.
Okay, right. And that's the steadfastfoundation.org, everybody. And
thanks,
so finally,
guys.
Ryan, I just want to say congratulations. Thank you for joining us, joining the Sharks, and congratulations on a fantastic career. Good luck on the next chapter, and we'll see you around.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Ryan.
Thank you, Ryan.